Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Back inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I am John Rook. Great to be with you again for day number two of our 2010 season. Are we okay here? Oh, there we go. It just sounded a little tinny. Maybe that's just me. I could be like,
it's the overmodulating board, John,
or whatever. I know, we're trying to work with new equipment and everything. Yeah. By the way, Eric Scalavino, PFW, for those that are uninitiated, we'll initiate you now. From time to time, usually on Wednesdays, sometimes on Thursdays, mm-hmm. but we'll stick around usually through the opening hour of our show so we can kind of bounce some things off of each other, go through the practice routine, what's on the schedule for this week. I will tell you that coming up here shortly in about 10 to 15 minutes, we will be joined by Brad Johansson, who is the radio play-by-play voice of the Cincinnati Bengals on the big one, WLW 700 AM in Cincinnati.
Not WKRP.
No.
Which doesn't exist.
No, doesn't really exist. But WLW, for those that don't know, is one of the true powerhouse radio stations in this country. 50,000-watt clear channel, and they don't make these stations anymore. You can't even get them licensed anymore. You can hear it in about 38 to 40 states on AM 700 if you're just out and about driving, certainly at night.
All right, you're a radio veteran.
Yes.
What's the difference? Why do some radio stations, WGN, WLW, WBZ, only have three letters in their call sign?
That's a great question. Generally speaking, those letters stand for something. A company that originally owned the rights to the actual broadcasting when it began back in, in BZ's case, BZ began broadcasting back in the 1920s.
So what did BZ stand for?
I can only assume
Boston
it was
something.
I thought it was Westinghouse Broadcasting something or other. I'm not entirely certain. I don't, Now it's not that way in all instances. I can tell you that obviously some are pretty obvious. It has to do with an airport call sign or letters that have to do with the town or the state in which they reside. I remember WGN. And WLW, I believe, has to do with 50,000 watts.
Okay. That makes sense. The Roman numeral L for 50 W for watts.
Yeah,
all watts. Right. So that makes sense.
I believe it has something to do with that, but I'm not entirely certain. Anyway, somebody undoubtedly will Google that and send that to me. Webradio@patriots.com. I don't have time to do that stuff. We're trying to hold a conversation here, talking football, For a change, we get to talk some football. So, obviously, on my way in today, I got a chance to, just basically peek in a little bit and watch the guys go through the paces. We spent some time in yesterday's show, Eric, asking, what fans thought would be the right amount of wins for this team. In other words, what did they think would happen? And I have to admit, based on the emails that I read, both on the air and off the air, the pessimism is certainly rising.
Is it pessimism or is it realism?
Well, I don't know the answer to that just yet. I think most of our crowd here, and I think you'd have to agree, most of the people that listen are somewhat overly optimistic and certainly rooting for the team and feel like this team will do better than people suggest that it might. So it's really hard for me to peg whether or not these people are trying to be realistic.
Well, I think you've got a bunch of different types of fans, I think. You've got the In Bill We Trust crowd, which always thinks this team is going to go 14-2 and win the Super Bowl, which is unrealistic. You've got the other people who are true pessimists. There aren't as many of them, but they're writing in saying, oh, the season's over, 4-12, even 6-10, it's over, it's done.
Yeah.
There are a few of those. I think most of the people that we're hearing from, at least on our blog and Ask PFW, are taking the realist's approach, which is somewhere in the middle. 8-8, give or take a game. 9-7, maybe, worst case, 7-9. But you've got a young roster, very young roster, populated by third year, second year, rookie guys. You've got a defense that has question marks at every single position.
Yep.
And you have an offense that looks like it's going to be pretty good, and it's going to probably keep them in a lot of games.
Okay.
In a division where I think the so-called consensus front-runner Jets look like they could be ready to implode at any time.
Yep.
The Miami Dolphins, who have a quarterback who a lot of people think is the next coming of Dan Marino, I don't see it. And you have the Bills. So you have the potential for all these teams to be very competitive and all be hovering around the same 8-8, 9-7 record, and any one of those teams could win the division, with maybe the exception of the Bills. But I think that's a realist approach. You have a bunch of young talent on the roster. You have a defense that has a lot more problems than in years past, but you still have an offense that looks like it can compete. So I think.
So you think fans are somewhat realistic in that sense, realizing that
most of them are.
The defense has obviously got some red flags surrounding it.
Yeah, I think most of them, at least, like I'm saying, I'm basing it on the comments to our blog and the SPFWs we get, and to the people who write into the show. I think most of them are starting to come to that realization that it's going to be a tough go this year.
Okay. Well, the question of the day then that I have for our fans today, and again, you can respond by one of several ways. You can pick up the phone. You can call us at 508-543-7482. Again, the telephone number is 508-543-7482. You can certainly send us the email to webradio@patriots.com. You can also jump on Facebook. If you friended me on Facebook, we can do Facebook chat, and I'll read your questions on the air as we go along. So
you going all social media on
you
us.
You know, I try.
I'd love to see Fred try to do that.
I try.
No, he can't even do the Google chat thing that we try.
The studio would be lit on fire.
We have Google chat too, but that's mostly for us, right?
So, yeah, that's in-house.
That's in-house members only.
Members only. Ooh, we're exclusive. I also have a Twitter account, @jrook0722. So there you go. If you want to join along, you can do so, but you can get in touch with the show any one of those ways. The question that I had today, though, is, you know, trying to take what Eric has in consideration for the fans being somewhat realistic as opposed to pie in the sky, which I happen to think some fans still are, at least the ones that are optimistic about, you know, records. I saw a few, you know, 10-6s and 11-5s popping in there, and I'm like, ooh, that's overly optimistic. We talked about this a little yesterday. I tend to say 9-7-ish. If we get any more injuries, any more problems happen, especially on the offensive side of the ball, 8-8 is probably more likely. And I know you tend to go that route yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just sort of, hey, I'm going to aim low, and if anything happens better than that, I'm pleasantly surprised, which I know we all kind of like to do from time to time. It's human nature, I think. But question I have is based on your individual knowledge of the team, and I'm speaking to not only you, Eric, but anybody that's listening right now, based on your knowledge of the team, pick one area, pick one thing that worries you most about this team. One thing. Pick one area of improvement. Pick up one little, you know, nitpick. Pick up just, you know, I mean, because I think we all realize there are several things that need to be tweaked on this team for this team to be a true championship-type contender. But what I want to know is what worries you the most out of everything. We all know this team has got some baggage with it. We know this team has already had some injuries hit to it, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, we know that Logan Mankins may not be around, if at all, this year, at least until Week 10. You know, Randy Moss has already started griping and bitching and moaning a little bit, which is typical Randy. But let's just face it. There are some things that are not entirely copacetic. So what one thing bothers you the most about this football team going into the 2010 kickoff?
The same thing that bothered me going into training camp and the same thing that bothered me going into last season, only I feel worse about it now, and that is the outside linebackers.
Okay. Outside linebackers.
Based
on their based on the depth, based on their relative youth,
lack
based
of,
on their inability.
Yes, all of those
above.
Things. Okay. The lack of right. going out and getting a bona fide pass rush specialist.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people have high hopes for the rookie Jermaine Cunningham, but that's a lot of expectation for a second-round pick to come right in and produce at that level.
All right. Well, we're going to continue with that thought process coming up here. And again, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. 7482 is how you join the program. You can also Facebook chat us, and we'll jump into your number one concern about the football team for the rest of the program. I don't want to take some time right now, though, to welcome in Brad Johansson, who's the radio play-by-play voice of the Cincinnati Bengals on WLW 700 out of Cincinnati. Brad, it's John and Eric here. How are you today?
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're hanging in there.
Hey, Brad.
We're just ready for some football. I assume the same is likewise in the Queen City.
Oh, man, it's time, especially when you add a five-game preseason. It seems like forever since camp started. So, yeah, we're ready to get rolling here, and all the hype machine can end once we take the field on Sunday.
Brad, I got to start with the obvious. How is the off-season marriage between T.O. and Ocho going in your estimation?
Swimmingly.
So far.
Truly, it's been fine. They haven't played anything. As long as you don't lose any games, things are good. T.O.'s been a model citizen as far as offensive coordinator Bob Rutkowski considers maybe one of the best students he's ever had. Never had a guy walk onto the field with playbook while he was trying to learn the offense and look at schemes, watch where players are going, go through mental reps, take rookies through in his dorm room. He's been the guy that you would love to have on your roster. And he and Chad are friends. I think the good thing about that is they're both extreme competitors. Neither one wants the other one to be better than him. So it's pushed each of them to be better on the field. And I think Chad's never really had a role model like T.O., to run routes, how you work in practice, how you do it. Chad's just kind of done it his own way and been allowed to do it that way. T.O. grew up watching Jerry Rice do it, and I think it's been good for Ocho to have him there. We'll find out how it plays out on Sundays.
Do you get the impression that anything is being done? I mean, I realize offenses in preseason are usually plain vanilla. You're not going to show a heck of a lot. But based on what you've been able to observe thus far, do you feel like there's any part of the game plan that's being tailored, stylized to take advantage of these guys' talents more so than what you've seen in the past?
Well, you have to compared to what last year was. They ran first, ran second, ran third.
Right, right.
Chad was double and triple teamed. They really didn't have much else. And they were able to run the ball. So they were able to dominate the clock and deal with that kind of game, but they weren't able to score points. And that's eventually what cost them. Carson needed more weapons. He needed to get healthy. He couldn't run much play action last year because he had gatekeeper's thumb and had to hand off with his right hand. Mm. There are a lot of things that are different about this offense. Gresham is added. T.O. is added. Shipley is in the slot. They can do whatever they want to do if they do it right, and this offense should be much more balanced than it was last year.
With that said, Brad, what is the general sense about this team, the general expectation from just the layperson, the media in your city? Is this expected to be a Super Bowl team or at least a Super Bowl caliber team?
It's the best roster this team has had in two decades, period. Not even close. But it's all on paper. And mm-hmm. We'll find out whether or not they can carry that through and whether it translates. They have one of the most difficult schedules in the NFL. That usually translates to more losses than people would like to set out when they say, oh, this team's an 11-5 team without question. I think the expectations are this was a team that won the AFC North. They didn't lose a game in the AFC North last year. They're a better football team than they were last year, and they expect to defend that crown. I don't think there are a ton of national analysts out there who even actually believe that they'll finish better than third in this division. So they still carry some chips on their shoulders, and expectations are wide and varied before anybody plays a game.
You know, I think that's great, though. I mean, teams that are championship-contending teams, or at least think that they are in the money, they want to have some of that expectation.
Sure.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, no question about it. I think they believe that they're a Super Bowl-caliber team, but they don't go around talking about that.
Right.
I think the Jets go around talking about that.
Yeah, we can get in. By the way, will you be watching the last Hard Knocks tonight?
I do. I pay attention, but I will tell you, and I'm sure I'm biased because I really thought the Bengals Hard Knocks was produced so well last year,
yeah.
And I actually thought the Ravens in their first episode was tremendously produced. But I'm not that interested in the Jets' hard knock this year because I'm not that interested in watching a coach go around and get snacks all day.
You have to admit, though, that's got to be one of the best all-time one-liners, I think, in NFL history.
I think that's probably the line that's going around this year is I need to go get a GD snack.
So. I know, it's just amazing.
But yeah, I'll be watching. He's entertaining. There's no question about it, and they have a very good football team. But the Bengals are not. I don't think. Believe it or not, even with T.O. and with Ocho, they're not as braggadocious as the New York Jets.
Yeah, this would have been the year, I think, maybe to have the Bengals involved with those two guys. You know, in light of that, as long as we brought it up, how did you feel having the cameras around and basically involved in everyday life last year for the Bengals? How did it affect the team, not only through the preseason, but did it affect the team early in the year at all in a negative sense with so much out there for everybody to see?
I think in much more of a positive sense it was for this team. The anticipation was when the announcement was made, oh boy, this is not a team that can handle that circus. And it wasn't a circus at all. It was just a few more cameras with a lot of stuff set up where you couldn't see it in trailers being done off property. And so it wasn't a circus at all. And guys kind of gotten used to it. And then when the show started running, I think it was something for a lot of these guys to be proud of. And I think it was a turning time in this locker room for guys to say, we don't want to be the Bungles anymore. Mm-hmm. We are going to be on the national stage, in the national spotlight, and we'd like to show who we really are. And I think it built them up. It helped them push their chest out there and gave them some of that confidence that this team hasn't had in a long time.
Well, the Jets seem to have taken that to a whole new level. They yeah. seem to be way overconfident.
Well, they were there long before the cameras showed up.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Jordan Shipley. And by the way, great stroke of brilliance,
by
the Bengals.
We're talking about a Texas player now.
To bring in not only one, but four Longhorns on their roster.
That?
You know, that's pretty good.
Well, and their PR guy's a Longhorn guy, so it's overloaded.
Son of a gun, you know? It's too bad, Brad, you don't have room for another broadcaster that's a Longhorn.
You know, I know. I understand. But, you know, Dave Lapham still does the Big 12 game, so
yes,
he spends a lot of time with the Longhorns.
Yes,
so.
He does.
Grass
yeah,
is always greener, huh, John?
That's right, baby.
That's right. Yeah, Ship has been fantastic. And we anticipate great things from him in his rookie year. You don't always expect a ton from a guy in his rookie year, and they're counting on two rookies on the offensive side in a big way, in Jermaine Gresham at tight end and Shipley in the slot to be able to make this team go this year.
Absolutely. Now, the other guy I wanted to refer to, though, is Cedric Benson, because here's a guy that, you know, last couple of off seasons have been somewhat adventurous for him. You relied on him offensively so much in the last year or so. How is Cedric, number one? How is his mental state, best as you can tell, based on maybe your conversation with him? Is he ready to sort of reassume that role as one of the focal points of the offense?
He will be ticked if this is not a running team first. Mm. He doesn't care whether T.O. and Shipley and Gresham have been added. He wants to be the guy. He wants to carry that load. He's in great shape. He's extremely quiet. Doesn't like to do a ton of interviews. Would rather pass on most of that stuff, and he wants to carry the load. He'd be fine if it was run first, run second, run third all year long. Although it won't be this year, I think the mentality of this team will still be, if we can run the ball, we can do everything else that we want to do, and it's going to be behind Sid.
When do you feel like, Brad Johansen is the radio voice of the Cincinnati Bengals with us here inside Patriots Playbook. What do you feel like Mike Zimmer, the defensive coordinator, what do you feel like his biggest challenge is for this team defensively?
I think pressure remains the same thing. If you can get to the quarterback and not necessarily sack all the time, but make him throw when he doesn't want to throw, it changes things. He has, I think, two of the best shutdown corners in the game in Jonathan Joseph and Leon Hall. I think they will be a year better. It's been shocking to have added Adam Pac-Man Jones and find out how good he's been before they play games. We'll find out whether he's in that same speed in regular season. He's been fantastic in the return game. But Adam has been a big help, but you've got to get to the quarterback and you've got to have guys who can do that consistently. Robert Gathers has been hurt a bunch of the time, hasn't been able to stay on the field, certainly hasn't been able to do that in preseason. Antoine Odom Started like gangbusters last year, then tore his Achilles. He says it's fine, been feeling great, feeling good. He had sleep apnea problem and had a CPAP mask that he was wearing and didn't clean it properly, got sick from it, lost another 20 pounds. He's now back close to his 270 weight that he wants to be. If he can go back to where he was starting the year, that will be a significant factor. Geno Atkins, a guy that they drafted, has been spectacular in the preseason. If they can get to the quarterback, Domantas Pekko has another year under his belt, and they can make that pressure to make the difference and let the secondary do what it does. I think the linebacking core is stronger. I think the secondary is stronger, and this was a team that finished fourth in the NFL in defense last year. Get to the quarterback, and it all gets better.
I think one of the things that some fans may not be aware of is the fact that Roy Williams is a part of the secondary at safety now. So how has his integration gone?
Well, I mean, he was here last year, except he couldn't stay healthy. He had problems with that arm again, couldn't stay on the field. They finally had to IR him. He hung around, weren't sure whether he was going to come back. And he's done really very little in the preseason because they want him to be healthy. So we all have question marks about Roy Williams. Is his speed still there? Is his coverability still there? We know he can still pop. The question is, can he last a full season? And I think probably at safety is their biggest question, other than what are they going to do on the defensive line. Are these safeties going to be able to help up and hold up for an entire season?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Brad, because you mentioned Hall and Joseph being the great corners on the outside who might be able to match up with Randy Moss, Welker, the likes of those guys on the Patriots offense. But the Patriots now have an element, a dimension that they have been severely lacking over the years, especially with Tom Brady being here, which is a tight end who can catch passes.
Yeah.
And they not only have one, but they have potentially three of them. And the focus has been mostly on the two rookies this year, Gronkowski and Hernandez,
yeah,
which adds a completely different element to this Patriots offense. Who on the Bengals defense is going to be charged with trying to defend those guys?
You're going to have a lot of linebackers out in that. I mean, they moved Michael Johnson, believe it or not, from defensive end to the strong side, and will be your starter at that spot. And
the
Ray
kid
Maluga,
who played defensive end at Georgia Tech, right?
Right, and he's going to play both with his hand down, and he's going to move outside. Maluga is going to move inside and outside. You're going to have linebackers who are doing a lot of different things now. And I think that's what this defense is going to try and do this year under Zimmer, is make a quarterback guess who's going where, because they have a lot of guys who can do different things, and I think they have safeties now that can play corner. So that's what they've been trying to specialize in this offseason, is how much more can you do for me, and how many positions can you play, and how can we confuse an offense to try and figure out where we're going to be. And I think it will be interesting to see who spots up on whom and how that whole thing shakes out, because obviously that's what Bill is great at doing, is having tape out there and then doing something on Sunday that nobody's seen on tape. And
right.
I think that's what the Bengals will be hoping that they can try and figure out.
Have you been able to put a number to your expectations for this team yet?
I could, but it would be wrong.
We're all wrong.
it's so ridiculous to take a look at it, because it just never plays out. Mm-hmm. Health in the NFL is the biggest thing. I would love it if this team were another 10-win team. I think with the schedule that they have and the difficulties that they have both on the road and at home this year with scheduling, I think to win 10 games would be fantastic. I don't know whether 9 wins in this division might win this division. It's going to be that difficult. But it will be crucial that they get off to an early start, and they haven't done that very well, and they certainly haven't done it in Gillette. So this will be a big one for them on Sunday.
Let's just put that number arbitrarily then at 10 for the sake of argument. With 10 wins, you certainly, I would guess, feel like that's a playoff team. That's good
enough
to reach the postseason. What do you feel like the players' expectations are for getting into the postseason? Is this a year where you have, you know, some names, T.O.'s joined this team and such, and plus this has been sort of a building process for Marvin Lewis, and I think that's what a lot of people are certainly impressed with, the fact that Marvin seems now to have things on his track, doing things his way after struggling with it mightily over his first few years here. would anything short of winning a playoff game or two or maybe even reaching the AFC title be a disappointment?
Yeah, I think it would be a huge disappointment. I think this team believes that they are a playoff team, and anything short of that. T.O. kind of said it when he got here. I watched the Jets game intently. I saw the missing pieces. I believe I can be one of those missing pieces, and I think in the NFL, all you do is just try to get to the playoffs. After that, it's a crapshoot, and you hope that the ball bounces your way. But I think that with me added to this and the things that they already have in place, I think we're a playoff team.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Hey, Brad, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
Guys, looking forward to Sunday.
Yep, safe travels here. We'll look forward to it as well.
We'll see you on Sunday.
All right, Brad Johansson is the radio play-by-play voice of the Cincinnati Bengals on WLW AM 700 in Cincinnati, joining us here inside the playbook. And it's great just to talk some football and be ready for it.
Yeah,
isn't
some
it?
It's football that counts. Football that means something. I mean, obviously, we've been talking football for, you know, 6 weeks now, but it's for real now, John. And I'll tell you, if they're going to try to cover Gronkowski and Hernandez with linebackers and with converted defensive linemen, advantage Patriots. Because down in the goal line, red area, no one's going to stop Gronkowski.
I would tend to agree. He's looked like a great weapon so far from the little that we've seen.
And between the 20s, I don't see a linebacker who can match up speed-wise with Hernandez.
Well, he's more of a receiver anyway.
Right. But I'm saying when I asked Brad the question, the first thing he brought up was the linebackers are going to be probably the ones who most likely are going to be asked to cover the tight ends, and they're going to get burnt if that's the
huge
case.
Huge speed mismatch.
Huge.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, I have to admit, personnel-wise, I'm impressed with what Cincinnati has. I mean, I've always thought Donnie Jones and Mal Luga, for obvious reasons, just with the USC pedigree. But Donnie Jones was a pretty solid linebacker. The corners they talk about, the addition of Pac-Man Jones. On the defensive line, Gethers, Tank Johnson is still there. Let's not forget that. I just think, you know, personnel-wise, Cincinnati has slowly been building to something. When they add a guy like Owens on offense, whether you really think he's still got enough left in the tank or not, I don't think is really a question. I think what you've done now is you've made yourself a dual threat, and so now you're going to have to pick your poison. Someone asked yesterday on the show, see what you think about this. Someone asked yesterday on the show, how do you defend those two guys? And if you have to choose one to double team, who do you double team? I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, you still have to double team Ocho Cinco. I think he's got the athleticism involved there where, you know, you're going to have to, you know, help, you know, the safety's going to have to come over and cover. You're going to have to take your shots with Owens. However, knowing full well that T.O.'s going to be going up against potentially a rookie cornerback, it seems to be somewhat problematic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see him having a field day over the middle.
Well, a rookie or a guy who's essentially a rookie in Darius Butler,
right,
who has, one or two starts to his name?
Frankly, I'd feel a lot more comfortable with, you know, McCourty.
on T.O.?
Yeah. I just think McCourty's got more talent.
And he's got more size.
He's got more size.
Match up a little bit.
I think he's got
better,
more speed. I think he's got a little. I think he's got the it factor that I just haven't seen in Darius Butler, to be honest with you.
And, you know, it's funny how the McCourty pick was sort of controversial back in April.
But when you stand him next to what you currently have on the field, makes a hell of a lot of sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's ironic how that turned out.
That's why we let the coaches, you know, and the personnel pick the players they do.
Right, but here's my question, though. If Lee Bodden doesn't get hurt when he does,
well, then you're talking about the Patriots potentially having a strength there. If Bodden is back there to provide his veteran leadership, bring along the young and out on the field, so to speak, I still think McCourty's the guy that's got to be there, even over Darius Butler. I'm just not a Darius Butler fan. Has nothing to do with his UConn pedigree either. I don't like what I've seen from him. I didn't like what I saw last year, especially didn't like what I saw in the preseason. He got burnt like Elvis. Toast Patterson used to get burnt for the Giants. So I'm not a big fan. And based on what I've seen, I'm thinking, well, you know what, you're going to have to put the young guy in there. Love to have him kind of come along with a guy like Bodden to sort of, you know, mentor him along the way. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. He's going to have to be thrown into the frying pan.
I'm still holding out hope for Butler because what I've seen from him this summer is he's almost there on every play. He's not getting beaten by a mile.
But he's still
not quite there.
He's still getting beaten. Every once in a while, you would think that if a player was kind of almost there, you'd see him make a play every now and then. He doesn't make any plays, Eric.
I know, but I'm still holding out a little bit of hope because again, it is only week one.
Okay.
And
it's early in his career, too.
I totally get that. I totally understand that. But, you know, I'm making a judgment on a guy based on what I've seen to this point in time.
Sure.
I hope he proves me wrong. You know, as a Patriots fan, I hope he proves me wrong. Otherwise, it's going to be a really long year back there. But the thing that's going to make him a better cornerback, and the thing that's going to make McCourty a better cornerback, I think we all know what that is, and you pointed that out to your number one trouble area for this team earlier this hour, Eric. And the question of the day that I have for everyone here, webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the number, and Facebook chat as well, if you like. The question I have is, what one area of this football team concerns you the most? Yours happen to be the outside linebackers, because right now we don't know what kind of a rush they can put on the opposing quarterback order to make the defensive back job easier.
Yeah, I haven't seen any. Yeah, a close second is the corner.
Well, that's
situation.
My number one. My number one concern on this
close
team.
Second.
My number one concern is the cornerback situation on this team. And I rank it above the outside linebackers simply because of the raw youth and because of my obvious disdain now for Darius Butler. Now, you know how much over the last couple of years I've been banging on Lawrence Maroney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we both have, but I've been pretty consistent with it. It's pretty clear to me the coaches are finally picking up on it as well, because I don't think the guy's got a future at all. I don't even know if he has a future outside of New England. I'm about ready to move Darius Butler into my Lawrence Maroney category, and that's not a place that he wants to go. Certainly not for the benefit of this franchise.
Okay.
I'm willing to give him a little slack this year because it's year two.
It's year two, and also Maroney played quite a bit in his rookie year. Butler, not so much. Not as much as Maroney did.
That's okay, true.
And so this is essentially Butler's rookie year. Essentially. Because he's getting thrown in as a full-time starter from day one.
I don't buy that, only because he's been in the locker room, he's been in the practices, he's gone through two training camps. You know, is it his rookie year on the field in game time? Well, it might be based on his playing time, but nothing else says that he's a rookie. I expect more out of a guy that had some thought process, that was a draftee, that they're throwing in there, that they didn't go out and get somebody else for simply because they feel like the guys they have can do the job. I mean, it's pretty obvious they didn't go out and pick up another linebacker or a defensive lineman because they think what they have is adequate, which is a little scary.
Well,
Eric, how else do you read that other than what they feel they have is adequate?
How I read it is they didn't want to spend the money to get Julius Peppers.
Well, yeah.
Let's not forget, that was an option earlier this offseason.
It was.
For the second year in a row.
Yeah, it was.
And if Julius Peppers is on this defense, the pass rush takes on a completely different look, does it not?
Well, it's just, you know, that just kind of, you know, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, then we get into a whole other course of conversation over, you know, is this team just trying to batten down the hatches for, you know, what obviously now is an uncapped year, but at the same time, prepare for the worst and no football at all next year. They don't want to spend the money.
Well, that's true, but you still have a season to play this year.
Right, so why don't you...
And a Super Bowl to try to win.
But why don't you go out there and compete knowing that, you know, your clock is tick-tick-tocking with Tom Brady at quarterback?
Well, that's my point.
Well, and that's another reason why I slammed him, you know, a couple of years ago and continue to say that trading Richard Seymour was a bad idea.
I think they would probably agree with you at this point.
You know,
maybe even
now
last season they might have agreed.
If Oakland ends up with the worst record in the league and we get a top 1, 2, or 3 pick, I might be willing to revisit that.
Well, it also depends on how they use those picks.
Yeah, are they going to trade down?
They have 4 picks right now in the top 2 rounds.
Right. Are they going to trade down again?
What are they going to do with
them? Yeah, what are they going to do with it? They're going to trade down again. I swear we'll have a riot on our hands at the draft party next April. We'll have a riot.
Close this year, probably.
Yeah, we did. We absolutely did. Well, you were there this year.
You
came for the season ticket holder thing that we did at the draft party.
Before the pick was made.
Yes, before the pick was made, and we talked about it. Mm-hmm. And after you guys left and went back over, when the Patriots started trading down in order to get McCourty, grumbling was a mild understatement. Because these are your hardcore, these are the season ticket holders. These are the people that are faithful and with you. And it's kind of like, all right, let's see what they can do with it. These are the people that you have to depend on if we have an off year next year, these are the people you have to depend on that will be back in your corner. How are you going to put them in your favor if you're not doing the best you can to build a championship contender?
Right. And next
year, that's the problem that I have.
Sure. Sure.
You
and
know?
And next year, if there is a lockout, it would begin March 1st.
Yes, it would. So we would have no draft.
We would have a
draft. We would have a draft. Yes, we talked about that. Yeah,
that would be the only league business that would be taking place during the lockout would be the draft. So it'd be even more important for
the Patriots
to do something
with that pick.
Spectacular with those four picks.
Yeah, with those four picks in the first two rounds.
First two rounds.
All right, let's get a break in here. Webradio at patriots.com is, again, the email address. You are welcome to join the conversation. We hope that you'll do so. Our question of the day is, what is the number one area of concern going into the season based on your own individual knowledge? And admittedly, you may not know much. You may think, oh, well, I'm kind of listening to you guys so I can find out. That's fair. But based on what you know of the team, what you followed on the team, what you've heard said or seen written about the team, what is your number one area of concern for this football team going into the opener this Sunday against the Bengals? 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Facebook chat us as well. We're tweeting, although I haven't tweeted in a while. I may not tweet today. I usually do it after the fact. It's tough for me to multitask like that. But the Facebook chat is open, so if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, you can look for me, John Rook, JOHN.ROOKE, and we can Facebook chat if you want to fire off the question. We'll go that route as well. We'll take the time out here. John Rook and Eric Scalavino today. We're in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? I'm jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Back inside Patriots Playbook on a Wednesday here is the opening week of the National Football League season for 2010. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. And you can certainly reach the show as well, webradio at patriots.com. Emails starting to come in, 508-543-7482, the phone number, and Facebook chats and questions coming through Facebook. Again, if you want to join the show on Facebook, just send a friend request to John Rook. That's me, R-O-O-K-E. I'll accept it, and we can talk some football between 2 and 4. And who knows, if you catch me online somehow, some way, some other time, which I usually use this to converse with family and other, people that live far away. I actually also use it for business quite a bit as well, you know, other people that I know in the business. For instance, I had a nice online session yesterday with the voice of the Boise State Broncos.
What a great
friend of
what
mine.
A great win for them the other
was
night.
That an unbelievable game, oh, by the way? Was that an unbelievable game? Rarely do they live up to the hype. That one did. I had a blast, and so I wanted to send Bob a note, and we ended up, you know, chatting away on Facebook. So it's, you know, hey, it's a way to stay in touch. Mm. Anyway, Brian sends this. He says, "Why so down on Butler? I understand that he's young, but the guy has hardly played at all. I think we should see what we can do before writing him off as another Maroney." Obviously, I hammered him, so I will certainly take the call for that. Brian, I'll tell you, look, my main concern with Butler is what I just told Eric a short while ago. He's close on a lot of plays, but I never see him make one. He's always getting beat just by a little bit, usually with a guy who you could consider marginal or mediocre or even just average. Every once in a while, he's going to make a play.
By making a play, you mean just a pass defense?
I'm talking a pass defense, a pass broken up, a pick, something to keep the receiver from catching the ball. It seems like every time the ball gets thrown his direction, he's a half a step or more behind.
I'll throw in another example of making a play for a cornerback.
Fair enough.
Beating the screen. You know, the little bubble screen that teams like to throw now where they kick a lineman out to block against the overmatched cornerback? I need to see him shed a block and stuff a screen at the line of scrimmage, at or around the line of scrimmage. Because Butler's not a huge guy. He's not much bigger than I am. And he's being asked to defend receivers who are several inches taller than him. And if a lineman, a guard, comes kicking out of there to try to block him, he's going to have to use his speed to get around that and to try to make the play. And I think teams are going to, you know, they might not do it as much against McCourty, who, as we said, is bigger. But you got Wilhite, Wheatley, Butler, even Kyle Arrington, small guys, small corners. So that's another area where they need to make plays, is stuffing those kind of things. Because you get a guy like Stephen Neal, or even Dan Connolly, 6'3", 6'4", 300 pounds, running up against a guy 5'8", 5'9", 190 pounds.
Yeah.
That's a mismatch. So they're going to have to make plays that way, too, when teams with good offenses and good receivers start throwing a lot of those screen passes.
Ian sends this via Facebook. He says, "I still think that Bill is going to run the 3-3-5 nickel all season. With the ultimate bend but don't break defense, he'll give up plenty of yards on the ground but make teams really work to beat them. Pass rush is the obvious flaw in the team, though." You know, Ian and I actually, we chatted about this yesterday when I accepted on Facebook, and we got into a conversation immediately about that. And actually, I thought that the 3-3-5, the big nickel package, which you see more and more college teams run nowadays because they're trying to, you know, defend
cover the
spread.
Spread offenses.
Spread
yeah.
offenses.
Yeah.
I actually don't think that's a horrible idea, knowing, number one, that you need the help defensively in the secondary, but number two, you got to make certain, I think, that this team is still going to be strong enough against the run.
Well, that's
and
my
that's,
concern.
That's the big question mark right now, whether or not it's stout enough against the run. But if you've got your two gappers, you know, basically stuffing the run at the line of scrimmage and allowing those backers to come up, in theory, and allowing those backers to come up and make the play, then I could see doing that, or at least changing that look and throwing that big nickel package in there from time to time. You know, that's generally the Patriots have played with that in the past, mm-hmm. and that's where I thought losing a guy like Brandon McGowan really hurt, because he's the guy that played that role. I assume that a guy like Jared Page is going to end up being in that sort of hybrid big nickel type role if the Patriots decide to go to that or use that at some point in time.
He might. My concern is that the last time we saw this team play a meaningful game, they got run over from play one. They couldn't stop anything else the rest of the day. So if you go to that 3-3-5 and you go up against a team that has a strong running game, then what?
Yeah.
You're already behind the eight ball as it is. And if you have fewer big bodies out there to defend against the run, that's a problem.
Well, you know, I think they probably also want to see whether or not the linebacking corps has versatility. So, in other words, if you lined up, you know, with only three linebackers, you want to be reasonably certain that somebody is going to be able to play a little bit different style on the wing. If you move Mayo into the middle, is that somebody Brandon Spikes? Is that somebody Jermaine Cunningham? I mean, we don't know, depending upon what the substitution patterns might be. Mm. But I think there are other things that you have to look at first before you can really determine whether or not that would be a, you know, I guess a legitimate, you know, standard-based defense. You know, like I said, we see that 3-3-5 being run all the time in college football now, simply because teams are doing whatever they can to get more speed on the field to defense the spread and or the run-and-shoot style offenses that you see.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense for college. Completely makes sense for college because more offenses do that. But in the NFL, you have a variety of offenses, schemes, more productive running games. You don't have that spread them out five wides on every play like you see a lot of college teams do. So it's a dangerous, it's a risky move, I think, to make that your base defense as an NFL team, especially this one where there's so many question marks. D-line, outside linebacker, inside linebacker, both spots on the in the secondary, corner and safety. There's a little bit of, you know, they're banged up, as you mentioned, with McGowan out for the year, and Page is a newcomer. He's got to get up to speed very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Just everywhere you look on the defense, John, it scares me.
Let me get this one here from Aaron in Sterling, Virginia. He says, a couple of quick questions that I didn't have time to answer for him yesterday. Well, with the Pats keeping running back Javaris James on the practice squad, doesn't that push the total to six? Does that seem odd to you when depth at other positions is so thin?
And I would say yes, it is a little bit, especially when there are only two quarterbacks on the roster now. Last year they had two and a half.
Come on, we have Julian Edelman.
Legitimate quarterbacks. You know what I'm talking about.
I know.
At least last year they had, for most of the year, they had Isaiah Stanback, who was a quarterback and a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So in an emergency, they at least could go to him. Then later in the year, they actually signed a quarterback, Jeff Rowe, who was on the practice squad. They had a third person in the mix. Then they had Zach Robinson through the summer. And when he was let go, they had nobody. They have Brady and Hoyer, and they have nobody to alleviate either of those two guys or to spell them in practice, at least to give the arms a rest. I'm a little surprised that they carried a sixth running back and put him on the practice squad.
I actually like Javaris James, though. I actually think potentially, you know, he can end up sticking with his team at some point. He said, should Nick Kazier be on PUP? Wouldn't that have saved a roster spot for 6 weeks and allowed the Pats to keep one of the rookie O-line guys, Welch or Larson, for instance, so that they didn't get grabbed up by other teams? I guess it's safe to say he is healthier than what was originally thought. That is precisely what I thought.
He couldn't. They couldn't put him on PUP, John.
Why?
Because he started training camp. We talked about this at the end of the last show. If you start training camp on the field in uniform.
You can't be put on
PUP. You have to be put on
IR.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So if he had started training camp, like Wes Welker, they started Wes on active PUP as opposed to reserve PUP. They put him on active PUP, meaning when they, if he had a setback or something, they could have put him on reserve PUP and he would have missed the first 6 weeks. But they guarded against that.
So this is this back problem that Kazier has happened after camp
started.
And
it came up the second day of camp.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long, so people forget that.
What could he possibly have done in the second day of camp that screwed him up this far in the season?
I don't know, but obviously they do feel like there's a chance for him to come back or else he'd be on IR.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah, because he would be on IR, and then they would have kept probably one of those rookie O-line guys.
But he can't put him on PUP because he did practice the first day of camp.
Then suffice to say, they still have hopes for Kazier to be a part of the team this year.
Sure.
All right. When Quinn Ojanaka is counted toward the 53, who do you think gets dropped? Another O-lineman, or does Mankins count it all toward the 53?
I think the rookie that they picked up the other day, Steve Maneri.
Maneri?
Gets let go. And I think they picked him up for that reason, because they knew they were going to be short one lineman this week in week one. So when Ojanaka comes back next week, I think he's the
one that gets
the axe.
By the way, I liked Ojanaka at Syracuse. I think he was a very solid player.
He says he can play all five positions.
Well, that's what they're looking for. That's the Patriots have always prided in their offensive line, having that type of versatility. And he did. I know he played guard and tackle at Syracuse. I don't think I ever saw him play center at Syracuse, but I thought he was he was an all Big East and offensive lineman. So I think, you know, that's the kind of guy that the Patriots look for. Versatile. This one's for you, Kev. Does the new guy Kevin kiss up to Andy out of fear or respect? What's the over-under on months before a single white female situation arises between them? I'm putting my money on 2 months. I feel it will involve Kevin camping out overnight in Andy's boat and using steroids to enlarge his cranium.
Do you think I kiss up, Eric, to Andy?
No, not really. No.
I didn't think so either, of all people.
That's it? You don't think you kiss up,
I kiss up to Andy. The only person I identify with the most in the show is Paul, because we're both balding and overweight. That's all I got.
Yeah, but your excuse is I mean, what excuse do you have? You're like 25 years,
that's
almost
true.
30
I
years
have,
younger
I have,
than
I have.
You're
no
30 years younger than Fred.
30 years younger than Paul.
But what I'm saying,
Paul too, for that matter.
But what I'm saying is, though, I don't think I suck up to any of you guys, do I?
No, not at all.
I think so.
Absolutely not.
By the way, when are we getting the TVs in here fixed?
I was just going to ask. It's dark in here for some reason.
I'll come in and see what I can.
None of the TVs are working?
No.
It's what?
It's been a problem for almost the whole preseason. We haven't had TVs.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I've been down here before during the preseason, and they were working fine.
No, we changed carriers or something, and then they came in here one day and started messing with them, and they said, oh, you have it, and then the next day they were all gone, and we haven't had them since.
God, this is an NFL stadium, an NFL team, and we got nothing in here.
Yeah.
Good grief. Okay. Welcome to Gillette Stadium.
And it's helpful for us on the show because we get to keep up with breaking
well,
news.
Well, yeah, breaking news and everything like that. So you'll have to keep us up to date on breaking news then, I guess. By the way, Kevin Collins, again, for those that weren't with us yesterday, is our brand new producer. So we're happy to have Kevin. He worked at 98.5, the Sports Hub, which is now the flagship home for Patriots football, Boston Bruins hockey, New England Revolution soccer, Toucher and Rich in the mornings. What am I missing? Tony Maserati and Mike Felger, okay, Gresham Zolak, oh, good Lord. I know those guys from the Score days, as you do too, Eric. So, okay, Gene from Daytona Beach. John, can you ask Eric if he saw Javaris James on the field, and how did he look? I believe he will be a factor for our team before the year's end. He and Eric Hernandez, I am very excited about. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
Saw him out at practice today. He's wearing number 35, which Thomas Clayton had worn during the preseason. We only get to watch 20 minutes of practice at the most, and the majority of that is team stretching period. So if we're lucky, we get to see two drill periods, which will give us almost 10 minutes of actual practice viewing time. So we're not seeing a whole lot of teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing team offense, team defense, 7-on-7. It's not like training camp where we get to see all of it, and you can really assess how a player looks. All we're seeing is him, you know, running through the bags or hitting the sled or catching passes, you know, with no defender in front of him. So it's kind of tough to evaluate how the guy looks. I mean, yeah, he looks the part in uniform, but it's just difficult when we don't really get that access that we get during training camp.
'Tis true. By the way, Gene also says, my biggest concern for the team is the cornerbacks playing so far off of the receivers. They seem to be more worried about failing, which will guarantee failure. And, Gene, I think that's a very good point because that's my primary fault with Darius Butler. He's too far away from the guys. He plays too soft.
And that was the common lament for Ellis Hobbs when he was here. He always gave a 10 to 15-yard cushion.
Hobbs, though, had recoverability. It was late some of the time, but he had the athletic ability to be able to recover that I have not yet seen in Darius Butler. Thus lies my big problem with Darius Butler to get to that point. So, looks like we have television.
We have some, yeah.
We have TVs. At least we have ESPN. I don't really care about looking at Scott Van Pelt's bald head on ESPN radio, but other than that, that's cool.
Channel 40 on one of those.
Pardon us while we get our house in order.
Yeah, we need to get back to
normal. We need some house cleaning here.
I was telling them guys earlier, it feels like the first day of school today.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does.
It does.
Like we had a different media schedule today, so it felt like
What happened with the media schedule today?
Well, it was like we had locker room first, then Bill had to do a conference call with Cincinnati, then we had Bill's press conference, then we come back, we have to go out to practice at 1 o'clock. So it's like having different homeroom period. Oh, for God's sake.
See, you wanted the Food Network?
No, I wanted the news. I wanted Fox.
Oh, okay. By the way, before I let you go, because we're getting into 3 o'clock here,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on Reggie Bush and the Heisman Trust considering asking for the trophy back and basically leaving the award vacated?
It seems to – I mean, I'm all for if a guy breaks the law –
he cheated his ass off.
Oh, I know that, but...
I mean, come on.
Are you telling me Matt Leinart didn't?
I'm saying that it's entirely possible, but they got the goods. They got the goods, okay, on Reggie. They don't have the goods on Matt Leinart other than the fact maybe it's his conscience that's bothering him, which is why he sucks at quarterback now.
Maybe.
By the way, the Houston Texans did pick him
up. They
did,
yeah. He's got a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
Right. Again... if they have all this proof against him, fine. And I think he's sort of, from the comments I've heard, sort of resigned to the fact that he's going to probably have to give it up.
So he's going to go down as the only person in the 75-year history of the Heisman Trophy that's had to give the award back.
But I will say this, he's not the only one who's probably broken the law.
Doesn't matter. You're right about that, and that's sad in its own right. But his was so blatant. So out there, so in your face, you can't touch me, I don't care what you do, that I'm embarrassed. And I have nothing to do with the Heisman Trust other than the fact that I've voted for the Heisman Trophy in the past. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed almost. I can't believe that he's going to be able to put his face in public, certainly the football public, knowing that the guy is one of the worst cheaters to have been caught. Notice I said that.
Right. To have been caught
in all time in college football history.
So
you can rank this right up there with SMU getting the death penalty from Division I in 1987.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. I think so. So my question then to you is it time...
How do you like that, Craig James?
Is it time to change the rules? Is it time to change the structure of college football? I know there are some people out there who are talking about make it a paid... job, make the schools,
well,
make the programs.
See, I've always been an advocate of the student athletes getting a stipend. I'm not saying I'm not talking about paying them thousands of dollars to play, but I mean,
but make it official. You're a professional at some level.
I don't even know
like
that
a minor
I,
league
I don't even know that
team.
I call them that. What I would do is I would give them spending money. Laundry money has been the term used in the past where they get a weekly stipend of, I don't know, $100, something like that, to where...
That's laundry money, not laundered money.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It was laundry money. But, you know, because these guys are not supposed to hold down jobs. They're legally not supposed to be able to hold down jobs while they're in school under scholarship. Figure that stuff out, but that's what the NCAA says. So they can't go out and do for themselves. I too many times see, for instance, the basketball teams that I follow stuck on campus over the Christmas holidays where everybody else is at least home, and the cafeteria is shut down. They got no place to go. Mm-hmm. They got no food to get to, and they got no money in their pockets. I've seen this.
It happens. And you consider where a lot of these guys come from. You know, a lot of times single families, single parent families, you know, socioeconomically lower areas. It's tough for a lot of these guys. They either can't afford or can't do this or can't do that. And so I'm just saying, if you give everybody the same, give everybody the equal, I don't think it'll stop the problem, because everybody's always going to have their hand out. They're always going to look for more. But I think what you've done at the very least is you put more people on an equal footing and allowed people in order, and I say humanely, I realize people are thinking, oh, they get a $100,000 scholarship for athletics. I mean, for to go to school, that should be enough. Yes, it should be. But the fact is, in the real world, it's not. So let's be real world about this. You wouldn't go to do something that you do if all you were getting was, you know, say $100,000 worth of something. Unless you have some cash to go out and buy a pizza or to buy a sandwich or to go buy some groceries, you know, you can get, it's like if you and I were paid in tickets or we were paid in copies of PFW.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Sounds great, doesn't it? We got all the stuff, all the tickets, yeah, everything we want. But unless I can somehow turn those tickets around for cash, what really good are they? I can't use them.
Yeah, the thing I don't understand, John, about why the way the rules are in place now is, if you're a scholarship athlete,
yeah,
you're not supposed to have another job or, you know, other ways to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Other students who have scholarships, who have academic scholarships, they have jobs, don't they? Summer jobs or off-hour night jobs where they're allowed to make their own money even though they're getting paid to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Are they not?
Yes, some are.
So I don't understand why the NCAA won't allow players to do that.
I'm not entirely certain on that either.
So I think, to me, it's a condition of
their scholarship is all I know.
But I think you're doing more harm to the player than good.
I would tend to agree with you.
So I think it's time to revisit the whole structure of the system. And
but as we all know, the NCAA, you know, works at less than a snail's pace.
Yeah.
So that's why we're probably not liable to see it anytime soon, maybe even in our lifetimes at the rate that they're going. So
it's also time for a playoff, but I can't get into that with you right now.
We will approach that at some point in time.
Of course we will. It's only day one.
That's true.
For me, day one is day two for you.
Yes, we got a long season to go. Thanks, Eric.
All right, John. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly joining us in the opening hour of the program. We'll sneak in a timeout here. We got more emails to get to. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Facebook chat as well is up and running. Friend me on Facebook. John Rook is the name, R-O-O-K-E, and we'll get to it. Football here inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school, so I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots Instant Game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots Instant Game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Well, we're kind of already 10 to 12 minutes into hour number two of the playbook. Took Eric a little long today, but that's okay. He had work to get to, but there's just so much to talk about here. And he's right. We can't cram in a whole year's worth of stuff into 1 hour, so we'll try not to do that. But he will be joining us mostly on Wednesdays throughout the season for the first hour of Patriots playbook and occasionally on Thursdays as well. Also, I can tell you that a regular visitor to Thursday's programs, as we have done for the last, 5 or 6 years, I think now, is Russell Baxter from ESPN, who is the NFL research coordinator for the network. And for those of you that don't know what that means, pretty much the way that we kind of explain it, which is a true story, Russell is the one person, the only person, at the worldwide leader in sports at ESPN. He is the only person whose job is the National Football League 365 days a year. 366 if you count a leap year. It's a true story. His job is the NFL every day of the year, and he's the only person in the entire network whose job is football, pro football, every day of the year. He's in charge of a lot of the research information that goes into all of the NFL pro football-related television programs that you see on ESPN, from NFL Live to NFL Primetime to all the the Sunday shows and the weekly shows and anything that has to do with the NFL, he is in charge of the research going into that program. And Russell has been a frequent contributor as well during my time on ESPN Radio over the years, as I started doing that back in '99, and when we started doing this show soon thereafter, a couple of years into it, I thought, wow, we really want to get into the inside of some of the things in the NFL and want a guy that, knows stuff. Let's ask Russell, because he loves doing radio. He's good on the radio. Mike and Mike in the Morning, if you've ever heard them on ESPN Radio in the Morning, they use him quite a bit for a lot of things, too, a lot of bits and certainly a lot of their information. And so Russell is a regular guest again this year for us. Every Thursday he'll be in the playbook. And what we typically do is we pick about a half a dozen games that we highlight around the NFL, important games, big games, games everybody's talking about, and certainly games that involve the Patriots and their opponent, but also involve divisional opponents. So we'll take a look at the Jets game, and we'll take a look at the Dolphins. We'll take a look at the Bills within the AFC East, any other big games that might be on the schedule that people are talking about, and then, yeah, we'll talk about the Pats. And so this year as well, one thing I did want to mention is that we want to make sure that on Thursdays you know that Russell is coming to the program. So if you have questions for Russell, all you need to do is email them in to webradio@patriots.com and just put in the subject line of your email, please say for playbook and Russell Baxter, or please say for playbook, and then I will see them if it's got playbook in the subject line of your email, and then we will ask Russell your NFL-related questions. If you want to call in, You can do that. And the best way to get a hold of Russell is by, you know, hooking up via Facebook. So friend me on Facebook, J-O-H-N-R-O-O-K-E is how you spell my name. And then you can chat during the program, and you can just ask your questions via chat, like we've already had a couple of Patriots fans do in the program today. And that would be the easiest, fastest, most painless way to get to it. So anyway, your questions will be welcome for Russell as well on Thursdays, and he'll generally join us in the second hour of the program, which is about this time tomorrow. So that's what we've got. Actually, coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to hear from Chad Ochocinco of the Cincinnati Bengals. In the opening hour, we had Brad Johansson, who is the radio play-by-play voice of the Bengals, and a good conversation with him to kind of get that started. It's so good just to talk football and get this going. It's just a great way to kind of, you know, get the juices boiling a little bit. And so we were able to find some basic info on the Bengals and the way that they have things set up, especially on offense now, with both Ochocinco and T.O. A part of a wide receiving core that Carson Palmer is going to be throwing to here on Sunday. But, you know, just to kind of get the lay of the land in Cincinnati, they expect this team to be a division-contending team, to be a playoff team, potentially to do some damage in the playoffs, and anything short of doing a little damage in the playoffs is going to be a disappointment in Cincinnati. Now, wait. Who does that sound like? Sounds like us, right? It's exactly how we look at every single season here. Anything short of doing some damage in the playoffs is looked at as a disappointment. Now, this might be another question for another day, because my question of the day to you, if you're just joining the program or you're, you know, getting into it a little bit late here, is your one trouble area for this team, one problem area on this team that you see right now. What is the most concern? What area on this team has your attention? What is the cause for your most concern on this team? And there are a lot of other things that we'll get to through the course of the season, of course, but that's our question of the day. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the number, and Facebook chat is available as well. Let's get back to some of the emails before we get to Chad Ochocinco and his conference call coming up here in about 10 minutes. Adam says, John, great to have you back. Thank you, Adam. Good to be back. Any initial thoughts on the opening game? As negative as people have been talking about the Patriots, I am not impressed with any other of the so-called front runners for the AFC. What are your thoughts? Well, I mentioned this briefly yesterday, Adam. I really believe that if there was ever a week one encounter that means more than the average week one, it would be this one. And I say that just because of the way the Patriots have the schedule lined up. I mean, most of you know the schedule, but, you know, you got the Bills, then you go to the Jets, then you come back, or you got the Bengals first, then you go to the Jets, you have the Bills here, and then you go to the Dolphins before you get your bye week on October the 10th. So you've got Bengals, Jets, Dolphins, three of your first four games. Two of those games are on the road. It's very easy. And by the way, not for nothing here, but the streak with the Bills has got to end sometime, doesn't it? How many we run off? 75 straight against the Bills? Seems like it, doesn't it? But I'm being facetious here, but the point is, eventually you will lose one to Buffalo. Eventually it's going to happen. Now, I realize it's a home game. You're probably less likely to lose that one than you would be playing at Buffalo, but keep in mind what happened here in the home opener last year. You struggled to beat that very same Buffalo team. I'm just saying, 1-3 looks like a real concern. And if this team goes 1-3 in the first 4 weeks, I am going to mark it down right now. I don't think this team will make the playoffs, starting the year at 1-3. I think 2-2, we can all breathe a huge collective sigh of relief, because you're at the even mark. You're probably not going to be any worse than maybe a game out of first place. I'm not so sure anybody's going to be undefeated at that stage. And, you know, you're still right in the thick of things. Keep in mind, when you come back from the bye week, you play Baltimore here, then you go to the Chargers, and then you have the Vikings here to finish up October. Man, I've got to tell you, if you really haven't scrutinized the Patriots' schedule, the NFL did New England no favors. Bengals, at Jets, at Dolphins, Ravens, at Chargers, Vikings. That's five. I mean, look at those. That's in the first 8 weeks of the season. Bengals, at Jets, at Dolphins, Ravens, at Chargers, Vikings. All of them title contenders. All of them. So I'm just saying, you've got to get wins. You've got to find a way to generate some wins where you might not think it's really possible. It starts with certainly this weekend. By the way, the Patriots are 8-0 in season openers all time at Gillette Stadium. Did you know that? This is year 9 of Gillette Stadium.
I knew the Ravens was their first home playoff loss, too, here.
That is correct. But they have won every season opener they have played here at Gillette since the stadium opened.
And they went 8-0 last year. I don't think that's going to be repeated this year with that schedule at home.
No. Mm-mm.
How many home games do you think they need to win in order to make the playoffs? There's a good question.
I'm going to look over the schedule.
We get Cincinnati, Baltimore, Green Bay.
You have to win this one.
Yeah.
Buffalo would be two. Ravens is probably a loss. 2-1. Vikings, probably a loss. Colts.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's murderer's row.
And then you have
Packers.
The Jets, the Packers, and the Dolphins.
It's murderer's row.
You don't have
row.
A breather at all at home except for Buffalo.
They could very easily go like 500 or below at home.
Easily. I could see 3-5 at home.
Which would be unheard of compared to the success they've had the last 8 years, like
sure.
You were mentioning.
Sure.
The days of 8-0 are gone, I think.
No, it's not going to. 8-0. Listen, okay? How about this? You've got this, you know, I'm sure you're recording. You probably can, you know, we can use this for playback.
Yes,
if they go 8-0, okay, if they go 8-0 at home,
okay,
I will run butt naked across the stadium floor.
It's a deal.
Okay?
It's a deal.
Okay. You can tell Fred and Paul and Andy.
Can that go on YouTube?
No.
Okay. All right. So there's a little caveat to the deal then.
At the end of the regular season, if they can go 8-0 in the cold.
Oof.
That way there'll be less
It'll
to see.
January is cold, yeah.
That way there'll be less to see.
I get what
Ba-dum-tsh.
You're
saying. Okay, thank you very much.
I'll be here all week. You're throwing down.
Yeah. Because it ain't happening. I feel like that's a pretty safe bet. Oh, man. I just, you know, kind of getting back to your point there, though, Adam. I do think this is an extremely important game for the home opener, for the opening game. It's huge. It could be everything. It could be everything. Now, is the season lost if they lose it? No. But it just puts, you know, real pressure on them to win one of those two road games, I think, either at the Jets or at the Dolphins. That may be a lot for this team to ask this team to do, especially this early in the year. And that's, you know, it's a given that you beat Buffalo at home in 2 weeks. It's a given. So, front runners in the AFC, you know, I think Cincinnati's going to be a potential team. I know the Ravens seem to be a trendy pick. So do the Chargers. Seem to be a trendy pick for, you know, an AFC championship team. I have to admit, I like the Chargers overall, and the Ravens are a close second. And, oh, wouldn't you know, they're both on the Patriots' schedule this year. Get the Ravens at home again. You play at San Diego on the 25th of October. But I think those two teams right now, in my estimation, are the top two teams in the AFC. I like the Chargers a little more than the Ravens because I think the Chargers have a more favorable schedule. I think the Chargers can win 13 games. Maybe more, but I think they can win 13. Ravens may be relatively close behind. But I think they've got a tougher division overall, so I think that's why you probably see the Chargers as the favorite to have home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs when we start talking about that stuff in December. Anyway, those are my thoughts. You're welcome to share yours, webradio@patriots.com, or Facebook us on the Facebook chat. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Alexander. Let's see what we got here. Yeah, Alex from Georgia. John, glad to have you back. Just finished listening to yesterday's podcast. Well, we appreciate your listening. And by the way, just in case you're new to the program, not only does this show air live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on Patriots.com, it replays from 8 until 10 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Select segments will also replay on Fridays as well, following Patriots Friday. And you can also download the podcast. So download the podcast if you're not able to get to us live, and you get the program just the same, and feel free to fire off an email or a thought if you like based on what you hear on the podcast later. We get great feedback from those that can't listen to the show live but definitely download the podcast later so they can keep up to date. It's a great idea. Alex says, I'm trying to remain optimistic. I'm also trying to remain optimistic about the Patriots. There were some needs, especially the outside linebacker position, that really was never addressed. Do you see anyone out there that might be in the same boat as Seymour was last year here with the Patriots? I still am intrigued with what Merriman might have left, and think he would be good on third down. With Mankins and the draft picks we have for next year, we do have the ammo for a trade, but realistically we're 4 days away from the opener. Well, I'm not sure where you're going with the same boat as Seymour last year. You know, they need bodies. They still need depth, not only in the defensive line, but also with the outside linebacking core. And I'm not entirely sold that the outside linebackers, or even the ones they have, are entirely talented enough to be able to do what this team needs them to do in order to cover up, so to speak, for inexperienced cornerbacks. You know, Merriman third down, that's a nice idea, but Alex, in all honesty, Merriman would never come here to be a bit player. And that's the problem you're going to find. It's always great to say, well, why don't we go get this guy or why don't we go get that guy? But those guys have to be willing to come here as well. Otherwise, you're asking for a malcontent situation that isn't going to do you any good. I mean, Randy Moss apparently likes being here, and he still complains, right? Although I have to say, for the most part, he's had pretty good behavior since he's been here. He says, answering your question from yesterday, I can see this team going anywhere from 8-8 to 11-5, depending on how well the defense can gel together. Right now, I would even be happy with 2-14 as long as those two wins came against the Jets. Kidding, but I would love to see the Jets implode. Well, I think that probably goes without saying for a lot of Patriots fans. By the way, is it time for our GD snack yet? Tell me you have that drop somewhere.
I don't have it yet.
Oh, come on. Kevin, we got to get on that one.
We'll get on it.
That's the one time, all time. I mean, that may be the all-time drop. Better than Joe Namath's I Want to Kiss You.
I think my drop's going to be I Need a Nap for the rest of this year.
Okay. Well, welcome to the Patriots, pal. Welcome to New England. Welcome to the Patriots organization. Sean says, John, I think the single most important thing to happen this season is to sign Brady, and it looks like it's going to happen. I don't want him to have any second thoughts when it gets ugly at Gillette come November. Maybe this season will motivate the owners to action like 2006 did. Yes, I would happen to agree with that, Sean. It does look like they're going to be able to sign Brady. The latest on that is he spoke to WEEI earlier this morning, and he obviously didn't have anything to say. But Adam Schefter at ESPN is reporting that the deal is most likely 4 years at anywhere from $18 to $20 million per year when the deal is done. It's not officially done yet. Doesn't mean it won't be, but it's not done yet. That's what they're thinking. 4 years and probably $75 to $80 million, somewhere in that ballpark. Now, I know many of you probably think of that, well, if anybody's worth that kind of money, Tom Brady would be. Pay the man his money. But keep in mind now, I think only so much, and I don't mean to denigrate Tom at all, but only so much of a player's new deal can be based on what he's done in the past. Honestly, if you ran your own business based on your employee's past performance, you'd probably be what right now? Bankrupt? Yeah. Broke? Probably. Out of business? Maybe. So why should we expect NFL teams, or any pro sports team for that matter, to do the same? Because we have an emotional tie to a player? Because this player means so much to us? See, this is where the Patriots sometimes, I think, unfairly get criticized for their business-like approach. Logan Mankins is a perfect example of this right now. Logan Mankins isn't going to be here anytime soon, unfortunately, and it's too bad. They miss him. They will miss him. But the Patriots are playing this like a business should. He's under contract. He needs to play out his contract. Logan, allegedly, because nobody's heard from Logan, but based on what we've read and what has been reported, Logan's upset over, you know, a process that began where the Patriots at the very least suggested that he was going to be worth X, and now the Patriots are holding back on that for obvious reasons. Number one, we're in an uncapped year now. Number two, we might not have football at all. Number three, you know, you've got other guys that you need to re-sign that, frankly, are in a little bit more, shall we say, higher pecking order than Logan Mankins is, and so they're not sure what the dollars would be. Plus, Logan's got a contract. And again, I can see Logan's point of view as well. If somebody tells you something that they're going to take care of you and then reneges on that, you're going to be upset too. Your own boss, if he promises you a raise and then he has to take it back, you're going to be upset. I get it. So you're really caught between a rock and a hard place here, okay? You can see both sides of the story. The bottom line here is that you are under contract. You have to play for what you're being paid. And then when your time comes to either renegotiate or move on, you take full advantage of that. See, this is how I kind of look at it. If it were me in that situation and I had been promised X, and then all of a sudden my boss comes back to me and says, I can't afford it. You know, we're going to have to talk about this at another time. No matter how pissed off I am, and I'm going to be pissed because it has happened to me in this business. I mean, broadcasters don't get paid squat anyway. It's true. It's a sad fact of the state of journalism here. But it's happened. My thought is that, all right, fine, I'll continue doing what I'm doing because I'm under contract to do it. But when my time comes to jump, I want to make sure that I'm in position to market myself and better myself and get what I feel I deserve. And I think that's all anybody can realistically ask for in any situation, no matter what your particular vocation in life is. And so I would hold that same thing to Logan. Look, it sucks. I know it sucks. Are you getting stiffed? Yeah. Are they bending you over? Yeah, absolutely. They're telling you to grab your ankles and take it. That's what's happening here. Do you have any choice? No. Well, you may think you do. Your choice is to sit out. And if he sits out beyond week 10, then he loses this whole year as a year of acuity, you know, potentially towards free agency. And that could be big in because we don't know what the new collective bargaining agreement is going to say and how many years it's going to take for a player to reach, you know, unrestricted free agency in the NFL. We don't know. That's being decided right now. It's part of the process. So he's gambling is what he's doing. He's gambling on his career. I'm not willing to do that. I wouldn't be willing to do that if I were an NFL player. Would I hate the fact that I'm getting used and abused? Yes. But what I would do is I would come back, I would play football, and then I'd let my actions speak louder than words. And then I would go out and find my money. That's what I would do. And that's why you've seen Randy Moss say a couple of things over the last couple of days, and my guess is now Randy's going to clam up. Tom Brady came out in his defense in the locker room today and yesterday and on the radio today on EEI, and Tom should. And he did the same thing for Logan as well, you know, to make Logan feel better because, you know, word's getting back to him. They care about these players. Tom does. They're teammates. They care about them, but they understand it's a business. All right, so now if you're the player that's, you know, affected, well, how best do you attack it? You just got to come play ball. You just got to come play ball. That's the big thing. So, you know, I hope that, you know, when Brady gets his deal signed, then the Patriots can look at Randy Moss and potentially, you know, look at him signing an extension of some kind. I hope that they can do something for Logan Mankins to bring him in before week 10 and bring him back into the fold at some point, because I still think, you know, he may be, to a man, the best offensive lineman the Patriots have, and he's not in uniform for this Sunday's game against the Bengals. That would help. then again, the Patriots may be looking at it like, well, we've only got a finite amount of money. We know that we have defensive needs. We need to keep our options open. And that may be part of the thought process with not signing Randy to another deal yet, although I expect that the Patriots will make an offer. And it certainly has to be part of the deal, I would think, to, you know, not giving Mankins a renegotiated deal because they just don't know what they can afford to give him because they have other pressing needs. You can kind of see how this sort of one thing plays off of another, and it gets to be a real difficult situation. You got to pick and choose your poison. You got to pick and choose your opportunities. So that's really kind of where the whole deal stands. All right. Good questions there. Plenty of time, though, still for you to contribute. Webradio@patriots.com. Facebook chat as well. And I've got that up and going. Answered a couple of questions on Facebook today. So just log on. If you haven't friended me, John Rook is the name. You can friend me, and then we can chat on Facebook and ask your questions that way. Maybe even get them answered a little bit more quickly. You want to take a timeout, or you want to go right to Chad? You want to go to Chad? All right. Short while ago, earlier this afternoon here at Gillette Stadium, the one and only Chad Ochocinco, wide receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals, had a chance to visit with members of the Patriots media, and here is his chat with the Pats media.
Hey, Chad.
What's up, Boston? What the beep is up?
I guess you can curse on Twitter, but not on conference calls.
Yeah, man, I can't curse on the conference call, man. That's a no-no.
Hey, I promised my wife I would ask. You're down to three women on your reality show. It's been taped already, so who wins?
You have to tell her to keep watching.
No hints or anything?
No hints. Just keep watching.
Chad, you go back a ways with Bill Belichick. Talk about how that relationship came about and what you've learned from him over the years.
I think Bill and I got very well acquainted once we got to the Pro Bowl and we got to sit down and know each other. And it became a relationship beyond just a football player and a coach. You know, he became a friend of mine, and he has respect for me, and in my game, I have respect for him and everything he's done as a coach. We've just always been really close and been fond of each other's work. And he's one that I look up to tremendously. You know, one that I've never played for, but I show the same respect as if he was my own head coach.
You have a message for Darius Butler?
No. I talked to him already through Twitter. That was all I needed.
Hey, is he good at tweeting back and forth with you? How does he rate?
He's pretty good. And not only is he good at tweeting, he's good on the field also. I watched film on him, and he looked extremely well, you know, to be as young as he is. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the matchup against him and the rest of the defense.
You mean you're not licking your chops at this young secondary?
No, not at all. You know, they play football just like I play football, so... You know, they look good on film. I'm sure the coaches will put them in position to be able to make plays. So I'm going to approach this game very humbly because there's not too many times I, you know, play against the Patriots and have enormous games because they game plan very well. They're very smart. And I have to play sound football myself in order to be successful.
You sound like you got one heck of a filter on compared to the last time we talked to you.
Huh?
You seem like you have a heck of a filter on you compared to the last time we talked to you.
What do you mean, filter?
Well, I mean, it just doesn't sound like you're letting loose the way that you used to.
Week one. I can't let loose in week one. Just
got to
enjoy it, man. Just enjoy the show.
Hey, Chad, I'm curious. There's a bunch of football players on Twitter, but you were one of the first guys and one of the most prolific. Why did you embrace this like you did? Was there something that led you to become like this, you know, Twitter?
I just started Twitter. I started Twitter last year sometime, you know? It was just fun. Just like to interact with my fans. It's one of the things I like to do. I like to interact with my fans and just give people the opportunity, a chance to see who I really am. Because Twitter basically tells you a lot about a person, what they do, their daily activities, how they are. You know, just by reading people's feet, you can kind of get a sense of who they are. And you know, I've been able to grasp my image back. You know, you don't have to listen to ESPN. You don't have to read articles, you know, and in the paper or anything of that nature. You know, you actually know how I am based off of just following me on Twitter. And I enjoy it. That's all.
Have you given Kurt Warner any pointers or tips for Dancing with the Stars?
No, not at all. He'll be fine. He's a quarterback. He'll be fine.
What's it been like working with Terrell Owens?
Oh, man, beautiful, man. Beautiful, man. Beautiful. It's going to be a freaking symphony out there. We're going to go hand in hand. A lot of people are waiting on us, you know, not to work and all this other, you know, hoopla, whatever. And we make each other better. We're pushing each other. It's going to be wonderful. You know, to be able to have two athletes of this caliber on the field at the same time, actually on the same team, a lot of people say, well, how can it work? And what we're going to do is we're going to prove and show you how it works.
Chad, obviously the organization went out and got T.O. They went out and drafted Jermaine Gresham. You went out and drafted Jordan Shipley. Do you have a sense after last year's playoff game that this passing attack is a lot more dynamic?
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely it is. I mean, with everything you just named, you know, it speaks for itself. You know, it's only to talk about it. I mean, we have the players, but we still have to go out there and play and execute the offense, or it's just people on paper.
So let me guess, you're Robin, right? And the Batman and Robin duo?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I made it up.
Okay, because Robin's the sidekick.
What's wrong with that?
Okay.
Chad, there was a moment last year in Hard Knocks when you came here to play the Patriots, and Bill came up to you and he said, one double 85, and he said, I'm not going to watch you catch touchdowns in the end zone. What do you recall from that game, and also do you expect him to double-team you for most of the game this weekend?
Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. He's done the same thing every time I played the Patriots since I've been in the NFL, and I don't think it's going to change this, you know, this time either. You know, so I will wait for my opportunities to come. When they come, I'll just make the most of them.
Chad, both of you and T.O. and Cedric Benson and Jermaine Gresham, there's a lot of talent on the offense. Is there any way that Carson Palmer can keep all you guys satisfied? And have you at least thought to yourself, I got to go easy on him as I come back to the huddle if I didn't get the ball?
Yes, I think we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
You notice any differences with Carson with all the new talent there? You know, like Tom said, with Gresham and T.O. and everybody else?
No difference. No difference at all, but I'm sure he's happy. I'd be happy if I was the quarterback, too, with these many people I throw to.
I think the perception might be, though, that he's not an elite quarterback. Do you?
No, I've never heard that perception before.
So you put him up in the elite category?
He is an elite quarterback. I've never heard that perception, ever.
Chad, in terms of the disappointments of last year in the playoffs and several years ago, how much of a window do you think this team has, and do you think you guys are going to come out this year and play with a different sense of urgency?
We play with a sense of urgency every year. You know, I don't want to talk about last year. Last year is over. This is the beginning of a new year. We have a new focus. You know, we want to strike fast and start early and make it easy for us on the back end. And that's where my mindset is. My mindset is on this week. We have New England. We're going to take it one game at a time and not look too far ahead.
What did you learn from your experience in 2006, coming off, not being able to follow up on the 2005 season the way you guys might have wanted? Maybe something you can use from that season here.
I remember way back then, man. 2010 right now.
You think you'll move up?
Is this the best team you've been a part of?
Huh?
Is this the best team you've been a part of?
Yeah, most talent, most definitely.
You think you'll move the ball differently than you did a year ago?
We have to wait and see.
Hey,
thanks, Chad.
All right.
Thank you, Chad.
So Chad Ochocinco, while he started out in very Ochocinco-like form, kept his cards kind of close to the vest, did he not, during most of that interview? You know, that's a little surprising in my, in my world here. I mean, normally he likes to open up, but as he suggested, hey, it's the first game of the year. Got to start someplace. It also tells me a little something that I sense that he's got a little bit more of a serious attitude about things, which then tells me that I think he believes that this Cincinnati team can really play and that the Cincinnati team could be something special if they're all on the same page together. That's the scary part about Sunday. This team, you know, the Cincinnati team has something to prove. It could be playing with a little bit of an edge, a little chip on their shoulder. It could be, you know, definitely an edge. They certainly have a lot of talent on, you know, on their side of the ball. And it's going to be difficult for the Patriots to be able to, I think, do the things that we expect them to do, but have the same kind of success from it on Sunday. All right, let's get back to the emails at webradio@patriots.com. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut says, I disagree with Eric's comment earlier in the program that the In Bill We Trust crowd are all drinking the Kool-Aid and spouting that the Pats will be 14-2. I consider myself a realist and stated as much yesterday with my prediction that they could go anywhere from 8-8 to 11-5, depending on how fast or slow the D gels and matures, as well as injuries, etc., to the offensive side of the ball. And yet, I adhere to the In Bill We Trust motto for the following reasons. Number one, his history with the Pats. Number two, he is considered one of the smartest, best coaches in the league and of all time. Number three, he does this for a living and probably has forgotten more about football than the average fan ever knew. This does not mean I think he is infallible or makes the right decision every time. However, I do believe he will make the right decision more of the time than many other coaches, GMs, and has proven so in his tenure as head coach of the Patriots. You know, I honestly believe, Howard, that I don't think this is a stretch. I think most fans feel the same way. I also feel similarly. But I will tell you that while I've never really been a total In Bill We Trust kind of guy, what I have had is respect for the position, which means, all right, he's hired to bring in the players, and then he's hired to coach the players, so let's let him do his job that he's been hired to do. But as someone who's in the media, it's also within our right and part of our job to ask questions and see if we can get answers. Now, you hear coaches, you know, press conferences. Not a whole lot to be said there, to be quite honest with you, most of the time. That's his right to do that, but he's not very forthcoming about the kind of things that, you know, we might feel are important or that you might feel are important. Or he's not going to do anything to denigrate his team or put his team in harm's way or give any kind of a sign to any future opposition. So I wouldn't say that I'm In Bill We Trust, but I would say that, you know, well, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt based on his track record. But again, the problem with the track record that I personally have at this stage of the game is over the personnel decisions that have been made for this franchise over the last 2 to 3, maybe even 4 years, really since, I think, since the 2007 Super Bowl season. And there's just not a whole lot to hang your hat on. There's a little, but not enough. And you would think coming off of a Super Bowl that a team would make sounder, better, more solid choices. And this team has not drafted well. Save for a few exceptions. Not everybody's been a bust. But let's just face it. You haven't gotten out of them what you thought you were going to get out of them. And that has to be, where do we place that blame? It starts at the top. They've got to do a better job of player evaluation, and they've got to do a better job of drafting, and then they've got to do a better job of signing and keeping these guys. And they have to be willing to spend the money. If you want to remain an elite franchise, you must act as an elite franchise. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go off half-cocked crazy like Jerry Jones does for the Dallas Cowboys. But Bob Kraft is a businessman. They do run this franchise as a business, as well they should, and I don't think anybody should rightfully expect them to do anything else other than that. But I also think that your business is not only to just make money, your business is also, you're in the business of professional football to win championships. That is part of the business. Otherwise, why are you doing it? You're doing it just to make money? Well, then let's be honest and let's say that. But I think we all know that that's not the answer, because the Crafts were season ticket holders prior to their owning the team. They've always been fans. They want to win just as much as anybody else, but sometimes the business side gets in the way. I'm waiting for a little bit more of the balance to be struck here, as opposed to just running it as a business. I don't see enough of the, well, let's, you know, do this to win type of attitude. When your window of opportunity again surrounding Tom Brady, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, is rapidly coming to a close. I think you need to win as many championships as you possibly can with a franchise quarterback. I've always thought that. I believe that strongly. I think that quarterbacks like Tom Brady may come along once in a generation. Can you win without that kind of a quarterback? Well, yeah, you can. Teams have done that. But you have something special here. And, yeah, the Patriots have won 3 Super Bowls. That's great. By my estimation, they could have 5 by now. Not just 4, 5. Why can't they be like the Steelers of the 70s? Frankly, I think they should be. I realize that we're operating in a different day and age now with free agency and such that, you know, the days of the, you know, Steelers of the 70s and Packers of the 60s are long gone. But the Patriots have had a chance to approach that, and yet they haven't really taken full advantage of that opportunity. Again, my opinion alone. I hope that that can happen once we get the current collective bargaining agreement settled. And then you can focus on the business of football, not only just the business of making money and running a business, but the business of winning games. And to win games, you obviously know you need to spend the money on salaries. More than just on your quarterback and a wide receiver or two, or a defensive nose tackle like they have with Vince Wilfork. Howard also says, the one item that scares me the most is the D and its youth and inexperience. Okay? One other item of note, in my honest opinion, is the comparison to the 2001 season. First 4 games of 01, Bengals at the Jets, Colts, which were still a division opponent at the time, and at the Dolphins. And the first 4 games this year, Bengals at Jets, Bills, and at Dolphins. Pat's record through the first 4 games was 1 win and 3 losses back in 2001. The offense was a bunch of unknowns except for Drew Bledsoe and certainly was nowhere near as good as this season's O. Pats were an unknown D, a bunch of older, experienced free agents sprinkled with a few young studs, were not expected to do much and didn't through 10 games when they were 5-5. They then gel and go on a tear, win 6 in a row, and go on and win the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying this is what is going to happen this year, but the possibility that this D gels later on in the year is real and possible, especially since the glue that holds the whole thing together, both then and now, Bill Belichick, is still there. Time will tell. Okay. Well, you know, Howard, I think that's an excellent comparison back to 2001, and I certainly see the obvious comparisons and the obvious similarities between this year and what the Patriots faced in 2001, save for the fact that, obviously, in 2001, the Patriots didn't have the track record they have now. And it's a little different financial game now than it was then, but still, your point is well made. Having this D gel later this year is incumbent upon staying healthy and keeping the guys that you have now in key positions relatively healthy. And even you would certainly admit that. You do keep a nice air of optimism about you. Maybe it's just my normal pessimistic nature when it comes to football because I don't like to be let down, as a lot of fans don't. But it's a very good email. Well thought out, Howard. Thanks for sending it. Jeff in Providence says, well, my number one concern for 2010 is linebackers. But you already covered that, so I'm going to say my biggest fear with this team is the secondary, which is my biggest fear with this team, Jeff. Absolutely the secondary. I kind of felt like, you know, just based on the inexperience, the injury problems that we've seen with Bodden gone for the year, McGowan gone for the year, and just the youth, unproven nature, you know, guys like, you know, Will Height, who have shown, you know, they've shown at times they can play, but frankly, if they were going to be every down players, potentially, you know, all the time players, you'd have to think they'd be playing more often. So I would have to share your concern. That is my number one concern with this team. Let's wrap it up here with this email from John, who says, I'm worried that the Pats will not be able to contain the run this season. And the main reason for this is that they have no outside linebacker to set the edge. Burgess couldn't set the edge, and now he's gone. But is there someone who's going to step up and do what's needed? That's the $64,000 question. or $64 million question, depending upon whether or not you feel like you could afford that. We don't know if somebody can come up and set the edge, so to speak. Sometimes it is very important to be able to guard, another team's running up on offense. Says the reason this is so vital is that if an opponent's back can run off tackle or further outside, Spikes and Mayo, as good as they may be at times this season, will become less relevant. Then the defensive backs will be asked to check down for the run before stepping into coverage. This will no doubt be tough with such an inexperienced core back there. If opponents can get 4 or 5 yards of carry easily on the ground, the Pats will have to load the box, and then they'll be vulnerable through the air. Is there any way to set the edge without solid outside linebackers? Sure, it's called defensive ends and changing your scheme from a 3-4 largely to a 4-3. But then again, you have to have two solid tackles, and you got to have two rush ends, which the Patriots don't really have. Their defensive ends now in a 3-4 scheme are largely glorified tackles. John says, can Belichick devise a scheme to compensate, and do you think a 3-safety set with a stronger safety up toward the line is part of the plan? Well, it was with Brandon McGowan. It could still be with Page. We don't know yet. We'll have to kind of get into the process and see in what kind of situations he's used. Just one of the many concerns until we see it all play out starting this weekend. Bring up some legitimate thoughts, John, and thank you for the email. You know, on Wednesdays throughout the course of the season here, following our program from 2 to 4 Eastern, Shop Talk is going to return for the 2010 season. Mike, Jeff, and Jim from Patriots Retail Store are going to be in studio to not only tell you about some of the great stuff that you can get, certainly here at the Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium, but I assume, gentlemen, that also means things that people can get via Patriots.com and, you know, all the specials that you got going on and all that kind of stuff. So welcome back to Patriots.com Radio. All right. Do you have them on? They're all on. Make sure, guys, punch your red buttons right in front. You got them?
We're red.
Now
red.
You're red. See, there you go. And they all said, thank you, John, in unison. So that's first time that and last time that'll ever happen. Give us a sneak preview about some of the stuff you're going to talk about in particular. Who wants to go?
Well, we're going to launch into basically all the new product that that basically came in over through August, September, all the new sideline gear, all the exclusive items we have. Got a lot of new memorabilia, signed memorabilia.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
There's a lot of neat stuff. So that's what we're going to tackle today.
Nice. All right. So you'll be able to follow along. You can look at some of this stuff, I assume, on Patriots.com while you guys are even talking about it. So you can get caught up to date and up to snuff with all your favorite stuff. And, gentlemen, it'll be great to have you with us again. So we look forward to it and listening to some of the special things that you got going on.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll sneak in a timeout here. We'll get into our Shop Talk debut for 2010, and then we'll be back tomorrow, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel right here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.